In the shadow of civil war, Sophocles' Antigone unfolds a drama that has captivated audiences for 2,500 years. When two brothers kill each other in battle, one defending Thebes, the other attacking it, their uncle Creon becomes king and issues a decree. Eteocles will receive proper burial as a defender, while the traitor, Polynices, must remain unburied, his soul condemned to eternal wandering. Against this edict stands Antigone, determined to honor divine law by burying her brother regardless of consequence. "I will bury him myself, and if I die for it, what happiness," she declares, establishing the central conflict that resonates across millennia. When Martin Luther King Jr. cited Antigone in his letter from Birmingham Jail, he recognized what makes this ancient text eternally relevant: its exploration of when conscience must defy authority, when divine principles supersede human law. The question at its heart remains urgently contemporary: what happens when what is legal conflicts with what is right? Outside the palace gates, Antigone reveals to Ismene her plan to defy Creon's decree. Their exchange showcases two distinct approaches to moral responsibility. Antigone embodies absolute conviction, willing to die for divine law, while Ismene represents pragmatic caution. "Remember, we are women, born unfit to battle men." When Ismene pleads they must submit to stronger powers, Antigone simply states, "Be what you want to be, but I will bury him." Unlike most Greek women defined by their relationships to men, Antigone defines herself through moral choice. The contrast intensifies when Ismene later attempts to share in both the deed and punishment after Antigone is caught. Antigone's rejection, "Thou wouldst not act with me at first, and I refuse thy partnership," shows her belief that moral choice exists in the moment of decision, not in retrospective solidarity. Yet Ismene's question, "What life is worth living without you?" reveals the human cost of Antigone's moral absolutism in her rejection of her sister's love. Creon takes power in Thebes with clear principles. Rulers must be fearless, prioritize country over friendship, and never favor enemies of the state. His decree to honor Eteocles while punishing Polynices follows this reasoning. What makes Creon complex is his genuine concern for a city recovering from civil war. His fatal flaw, however, is failing to recognize legitimate limits to state power. When someone performs burial rites for Polynices, he immediately suspects political conspiracy rather than moral conviction, declaring, "Nothing so evil as money ever grew to be current among men." This blindness to divine law superseding his authority triggers his downfall. When his son Haemon reports that the Theban commons with one voice support Antigone, Creon retorts, "What, shall the mob dictate my policy?" revealing his misunderstanding of leadership. Haemon's insight that a state for one man is no state at all directly challenges Creon's top-down authority. As they argue, Creon dismisses his son as a woman's minion, showing how he views compromise as feminine weakness. When confronted by Creon, Antigone boldly defends her actions. "It was not Zeus who made this proclamation, nor was it justice dwelling with the gods below." Her argument that the immutable, unwritten laws of heaven outrank mortal decrees directly challenges Creon's authority. Antigone asks, "Who knows if this world's crimes are virtues there?" suggesting different moral principles in the afterlife. While Creon maintains, "Not even death can make a foe a friend," Antigone insists her nature is for mutual love, not hate. Their confrontation reveals gendered power dynamics when Creon declares, "No woman shall be the master while I live," showing how Antigone's defiance threatens both his decree and patriarchal order. Both stand firm, embodying the timeless tension between individual conscience and state power, between eternal moral principles and political necessities. Blind prophet Tiresias arrives with disturbing omens, birds fighting with bloody talons and failed sacrifices, signaling divine anger over Polynices' unburied body. This supernatural intervention validates Antigone's belief that burial rites are divinely mandated, not subject to human law. Creon's hubris reaches its peak when he accuses the prophet of corruption. Even seers are prone to err, old man, when gold corrupts their judgment. This arrogance, suggesting Apollo's prophet could be bribed, shows how completely Creon has lost perspective on human authority versus divine power. Tiresias prophesies that Creon will soon pay with fruit of thine own loins for entombing a living soul while leaving a corpse unburied. Only after the prophet departs does Creon begin doubting his position, admitting that yielding is grievous, but fighting fate brings greater suffering. The chorus instructs him to free Antigone and bury Polynices. As Creon rushes to implement these changes, declaring, "'Twas I that bound, I too will set her free," his realization that it may be best to keep the ancient laws comes with tragic irony. This wisdom arrives too late to save Antigone, whose defense of these very laws he had condemned as criminal defiance. The final movement reveals the devastating consequences of Creon's delayed recognition. A messenger reports finding Haemon in Antigone's tomb after she had hanged herself. When Creon arrived begging his son to return, Haemon glared at his father, spat in his face, then fell upon his own sword. With his dying breath, Haemon embraced Antigone, his bride in death, his blood staining her pale cheek. The tragedy compounds when Eurydice, Creon's wife, takes her own life upon hearing the news, cursing Creon as the slayer of her children, fulfilling Tiresias' prophecy that he would pay with fruit of thine own loins. Entering with his son's corpse, Creon laments, "I am the guilty cause. I did the deed." Broken, he begs to be led away, a cipher less than nothing, and prays for death. The chorus concludes that happiness comes from wisdom and defrauding the gods brings peril. Their observation that the mighty are mightily smitten and only age brings wisdom through chastisement captures the tragedy's moral. Creon's refusal to recognize limits to his authority has cost him everything. Antigone remains powerful because neither protagonist is simply right or wrong. Antigone's moral absolutism leads to destruction, while Creon's concern for maintaining order after civil war is legitimate. His fatal flaw is refusing to reconsider when faced with divine and human counsel. The play speaks to our polarized discourse through its exploration of rigid moral and political stances. Both protagonists suffer by failing to find middle ground. Antigone cannot compromise divine law, while Creon recognizes no limits to his authority. Only through devastating loss does Creon learn that wisdom includes knowing when to yield. In a world where conflicts between conscience and authority continue, Antigone offers no simple formula, but invites reflection on personal ethics and social responsibility. Its enduring power lies in recognizing that profound human conflicts often involve competing goods rather than simple right versus wrong oppositions. Across millennia, Antigone challenges us to consider what principles we would die to defend.